Hello and welcome to Retail Gazette's Unpacked podcast, where we delve into the big subjects that matter to you, our wonderful retail community. I'm Kieran Howells, I'm your host for today's episode, and we are talking about a subject that likely strikes fear into the heart of any retailer. That is the threat of fraud. So I'm joined by Eric Horgan, the Chief Product Officer for Europe at Elavon. I'll let him explain in just a second why he's a prime person to quiz on this issue. I do want to say a huge thank you to Elavon for partnering with us on this podcast. And with that, let's go ahead and dive in. So Eric, wonderful to have you with me today. Thanks so much for being here. Could you tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. No problem, Kieran. So I work for Elavon, and Elavon is one of the UK's largest card acquirers. And a card acquirer is effectively a bank or a payments business that works with businesses and retailers and helps them accept card payments and effectively get paid, whether you're online, in-store, or loads of different use cases in between. And my role as head of product in Europe for Elavon is really to make and create the best experience for retailers and their cardholders accept payments. So we try and make the payment as invisible as possible in the whole checkout process because, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, what we've realized is the payment part is probably the least enjoyable part of people's shopping experience. So anything that makes it seamless, makes it easy, is really where we're trying to put time into and put our brains against.
So, look, I'm gonna hit you with a deep question straight away.
Okay,
then.
Let's go.
Why is the threat of fraud rising in our organizations?
Well, the reason is really that smartphone in your pocket or in your hand. And what's rising is the threat of digital fraud. So digital fraud has reached the stage where it's resulted in 11.3 billion losses for UK retailers in 2023. And digital fraud is really anything related to phishing. And we're going to go deep in a few of these, or stolen cards, or other ways that fraudsters have got card details and are using them in a fraudulent manner. So that's the big grower. We're seeing statistically, it's a retailer will way more likely be impacted by digital fraud than the more traditional types of fraud, like theft and shoplifting and all of those types of things. And also it's growing as well because we're paying online more, we're buying online more. So all of the trends are kind of tailwinds for digital fraud, and that kind of causes us a challenge. But we've got a lot of ideas in terms of how we might combat that as well.
I'm putting myself in the mind of a retailer and hearing that from an expert like you. Obviously, that is quite a disconcerting thing to hear. And I'm thinking, how do you differentiate when you are an online retailer between a genuine customer and a fraudulent customer? That must be a very hard thing to identify.
It is, but we've got lots of ways that we can help customers mitigate that risk. So the risk is there, and our job and the job of, well, and it's the job of retailers is to put plans and processes and procedures and technology in place that will really mitigate that and reduce that as much as possible. So there's a couple of areas we can go into. And the first is kind of practical, I would say. So there's a couple of trends we're seeing. The first is practical, which is we talk about the abuse of returns policy. So it's very much kind of part and parcel of a normal retailer's business these days, certainly those selling online and certainly in clothing, where somebody will buy a couple of sizes of the garment that they want, try them on, send them back. And that's part and parcel of it. But we see a lot of abuse of this. There's this idea of wardrobing where somebody purchases, wears, and then sends back. And it's not sort of victimless. I mean, you get spoiled stock, you've got time processing returns, and you've got kind of fraud as well that occurs in this space. So kind of on a practical level, that's one area that we immediately ask our customers to look into. So to be vigilant there, have a clear returns policy as well. And there are tools available. There's tools available that track patterns around customers that are abusing it, that have returned a lot, that are returning to particular stores that they see as kind of maybe, you know, easier stores to kind of abuse the policy. And so there's systems and there's data available that retailers can use to kind of mitigate that risk. So that's the first one. Mm-hmm. Then we go into the card data. And this is one that sort of has reduced over the years. So globally, what we've seen in terms of card fraud has gone down from 3.6% of all transactions to 2.9% globally. So it's reducing. And there's a good reason for that. So card fraud is this idea that somebody's using a stolen card. Using a stolen card, purchasing from the retailer, and then causing the retailer to lose money on that stock that they've sent to that cardholder. And what we've seen in Europe especially and online is the implementation of two-factor authentication when you're purchasing online. So you'll notice over the past 2-3 years, you make a purchase online and you'll have to go and authenticate that by effectively using their smartphone and putting in a password into there just to verify the card details that they've already sent online. And that's really, to be honest with you, it's really tightened up card details and the security of card details, and a lot less fraudsters are getting through with a stolen card because they won't have the smartphone and they won't have the bank app and the password, and the transaction will be declined. So effectively, there's a liability shift for retailers, retailers that use this two-factor authentication that we supply through what we call a 3D Secure plugin for e-commerce retailers. They'll be aware of what that is. There's a liability shift away from them once they use it. So if a fraudulent transaction goes through, but they've used this two-factor authentication and can show they have, there's no liability for the fraud. So that's a protection that retailers have. And we've seen that in use. And it's pretty much, you know, ubiquitous across the UK online where, you know, this two-factor authentication takes place. So that's a good protection for retailers as well.
A million things came into my head through what you were saying there, because I think you raised some great points. And one of the things that you were talking about there was obviously the return policy abuse.
Yeah.
And so it's a really interesting area that I'm sure we could, you know, really delve into very deeply. But you said a robust returns policy is kind of key there. But I'm wondering, how can retailers really strike a balance? Because we also know that if you make people jump through too many hoops, or, you know, things like return policies, they make a big impact on whether people are, you know, willing to shop with you. And you know, it can kind of change a snap decision to spend some money or not, you know, coming up against some of this stuff. So how do you strike that balance as a retailer between a great policy, but preventing fraud?
It's tough is the first answer. And it'll differ per retailer and their own experience, because, as you say, it's pretty much business as usual having more returns as a retailer. It's not like 20 years ago where, you know, a return would be very unusual, because certainly, say, with when it comes to clothing, you know, you want to try it on, you know, like so it's become BAU of online trading, put it that way. So returns are pretty much standard. They're part of your business, but you've got kind of got to track it to the extent that it becomes too big a part of your business. And like, rather than give out stats, there are per business kind of standard return rates, you know, and you can understand if you're getting a lot, that means you could possibly be a bit too open to your customers and bringing the fraudsters into the loop, because you're getting more. If you're getting less, then you might tweak it to loosen it up a bit, because genuinely, we do see that that is part of a reason why people shop. The ease of returns for online shoppers is part of the reasons they might shop in some stores. So it's part of the retailer's proposition that they've got a friendly returns policy. But it's really, you know, it'll be kind of retailer by retailer when they kind of decide, well, I think it's been abused. They could see fraud levels go up, or they could just, you know, from their own perspective, begin to realize time processed in processing the returns. Like, you know, a garment is returned, somebody's got to open it, figure out what's there. Is it spoiled? Is it can it be resold? And how quickly does it get back on the rack and available to be resold? So there's kind of a lot in there that would be specific to a particular retailer. Short answer, it's difficult. It'll be a judgment call by the retailer based on those types of KPIs.
Yeah, so it's an incremental thing, isn't it? You know, you've got to kind of find the balance that works for your business. The other thing that you mentioned, obviously, was the bigger case of online payment fraud. And you mentioned the multi-layered authentication.
Yeah.
I guess this is kind of, it's drastically different from the return policy abuse cases, because there is ways to really intelligently identify and prevent fraud kind of in the moment in these cases. And obviously the multi-layered authentication is one way of doing that. But I'm wondering about kind of real-time transaction monitoring and how that all works, basically.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, Elavon have a real-time transaction management system, fraud monitoring system that we use, and so do some of our competitors. So it augments the two-factor authentication. So the idea is you've got two-factor authentication that will smoke out most fraudsters, because unless they've stolen your identity completely, it's a difficult transaction to complete. But in the background, we have systems that are pretty much just looking for patterns in payments and payments volume and payments transactions, and then subsequently transactions that are found to be fraudulent, and feeding the data around that back into the system. So the system learns a bit more around, you know, a transaction from this cardholder, from this bank, from this country at this time, with this particular profile, has been proven to be more likely to be fraudulent. Let's hold that. Let's not submit that. Right. But what we have is effectively, and it moves into the area of AI, we've got machine learning systems that effectively take data, all of the data that we know about the card transaction and historic data about similar card transactions, looks for the patterns and makes a call from you. And the way we've implemented it at this stage is that, like, this looks suspicious. Have another look at it. Do you want it to go through or not? Even though it would typically go through, we've got an extra check here to have a look at it. So those systems kind of running in the background can tweak and can be set up to kind of auto decline as well, and just take that sort of decision making out of the retailer's hands, and even out of the cardholder's hands, where the computers are making better decisions than we ever can, assuming you got the right data in and you've got the right sort of learning structures for the data in.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I guess what it makes me think is it's really hard sometimes as a retailer to know what is an absolute must have from a very nice to have, you know.
Yeah.
And it's making me think that, you know, the potential risks of not implementing these elements like multi-factor authentication, that actually in this day and age, with the intelligence that goes into the fraudster's actions, it's not really a very nice to have anymore, is it? It's kind of something that could be absolutely devastating if your business isn't getting right.
Absolutely. I mean, the must have, to be honest with you, is the multi-factor authentication, because this idea of liability shift, it's like, it just means if I'm hit by fraud as a retailer, it's not my problem. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a good thing, but it's not my problem, because I had the capability and I enforced this multi-factor authentication. And if something went wrong with Visa and MasterCard, means that they're not to blame. They're not liable for that transaction. Whereas if they haven't done that, they are.
Yeah.
So that's an immediate one. So that's an immediate sort of protection you have, where kind of financially, you know, you're relatively, you know, secure that way when you're hit by fraud in this manner. So that's the must have. And then what we're finding is it's more the larger retailers are very tuned into fraud and very tuned into all of the data that they have about their customers, and feeding that into these systems to make good decisions as well. That's kind of the add-on, and where it gets more sophisticated and where it makes more sense for businesses that are larger to put the investment in those real-time fraud monitoring systems. That's where we see that occur. But certainly the must-have is get your two-factor authentication in, especially for online, because it will be good for your business.
Absolutely. So another thing, when I was researching before our call, another thing that really shocked me, actually, Eric, was the sheer amount of fraudsters who have success because they managed to trick or get past retail staff. So, for example, with phishing attacks, right, it's really quite shocking how they manipulate people who they think are probably statistically more likely to let them through or let them into the system. So what can retailers do about that? Because, you know, if you're dealing with thousands of staff, how do you really effectively make sure that they're trained to deal with phishing attacks?
Yeah, this one's a difficult one, and it's not just retailers. It's all businesses everywhere. This is now the most common fraud attack on businesses, phishing. So it's top of the list in terms of how a retailer will be hit by fraud. And you described it well, Kieran. It's a version of social engineering, effectively. It's trying to dupe somebody, sending a false email or a text to try and get business information, personal information, something about a customer. So our recommendation here really is it's back to structured training, really, and vigilance. It's very difficult to kind of have a very prescriptive training program, and it's more about vigilance. And what we've found already is that those more likely to give out details or personal details or details about the company that's company confidential are really those that are at senior management level more than the workers. So it's got to be kind of across the board for a start. And it's kind of vigilance and kind of understanding what some of the characteristics of what might be fraudulent, what to look for, whether it's an external email, whether you do or don't recognize the number that the text is coming from, the phishing text is coming from. We also would recommend that there's email filtering systems as well that can be used to optimize where these systems are pretty sophisticated, where they run a database of previous sort of phishing activity, where certain emails are emails that can't be trusted, certain numbers are numbers that can't be trusted, and kind of edit those out or filter those out from your emails so that really hopefully you just don't ever receive it. It's kind of held somewhere and identified prior to that. But there are two main areas that we'd kind of recommend retailers to look into, because it's vigilance more than anything else. Because as soon as you sort of describe what it is, a new example of it emerges, if you know what I mean. So you can kind of, there's a new angle, there's a new in to dupe somebody and get their data. So you're trying to train vigilance and create as much awareness as possible that this is way more pervasive than you realize. And because it is, you've got to have your eyes open with regard to the risk.
Yeah. And, you know, you said something there that really made me think, and that is that you would presume that it's people in customer service answering thousands of emails a day and things like this. But actually, and while those people are very much open to phishing attempts, there may be a false sense of security that you get from being more senior in a company. Oh, I would never, you know, I would never fall victim to
a phishing. You have to say it, Kieran, arrogance perhaps maybe even sometimes comes in, you know,
100%. And it makes you think, I mean, like, it reminds me of an example, Eric. Previously, I received an email that seemed to be from my CEO, right? And it had their name, everything. I mean, when you clicked into the email, it was some nonsense email. But, you know, actually, most of the time when you're looking at your emails, you're not necessarily seeing the email. You're seeing someone's name and the subject line. And once I received one of them, loads of people in the company received them. Luckily, we all kind of queried it straight away. And it said, like, oh, I really need to speak to you. I need 50 quid fast.
Yeah.
You know? That's not outside the realms of possibility that your boss may be in a situation where they're out a lunch locally with a client and they need you to come and help them out or something. But it's really quite sophisticated knowing who someone's line manager is and writing an email that looks like it's from them. It's, you know, it's not just these simple basics, is it? It's actually really complex now.
Yeah, it's got very, very sophisticated. Like, I'll go back to that term. It is social engineering. It's kind of to catch you at a certain point, or there's a hook in there that gets by my first pass of, is it fraudulent? So they will fool you. There could be the sent from address. Looks like it's internal. It's masked. It looks like it's sent internally. But, there's applications that can kind of weed that out as well. This is a difficult one. Because sometimes when they're targeted, their cardholders are targeted with their brand, for example. There might be a fraudster passing themselves off as a retailer, texting one of your cardholders.
Right.
So then you've got brand damage, because it's nothing to do with you. This is nothing you've put in place. But your customers and consumers are they're kind of wondering, and some of them are duped and some of them are taken in. So there's brand damage there as well, to the extent that, I mean, there are examples, we've all heard it on the radio, where, you know, retailers have come out and they restate, you know, we're not sending you texts, we're not sending you this, we're not sending you that. Yeah. So don't open them. I know banks do, but it has got so far as retailers as well, where the larger ones are attacked. So it's a big issue. It goes into brand, it goes into trust, it goes into all of those things that are very important to retailers in terms of their consumer base. So, like, awareness and vigilance are just so important here. You know, you're going to start everything with a bit of suspicion when it's kind of an unsolicited email or an unsolicited text, you know, be a bit suspicious, and that will help.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the next thing I wanted to talk about really was AI's role in this, because businesses like yours exist because the threats get more intelligent, right? And so the second that the threats get more intelligent than the solution, I mean, whole system crumbles, doesn't it? So what I'm wondering is how you think fraudsters may be leveraging AI to launch more sophisticated attacks on both retailers and consumers, actually.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one that's coming up quick on the outside, and you characterized it well there. And you know, across all of these, you'll find the fraudsters are always a little bit ahead, but we're pretty quick in closing them down, kind of as an industry. So AI is the big one. So AI is sort of, it offers us tools that really help us detect, but then it also offers a technology that's so easy to abuse. And kind of, you know, so it's two sides of the fence for definite. So a couple of the things that we're seeing, or that we've seen already in the market, is fake AI apps. So this might be a version of ChatGPT. I don't know if you've downloaded the app or gone onto the website. And really, it's a fake version, and it's phishing your details, your personal details, your card details. So it's kind of asking you a series of questions to draw you in, to get your details and steal your identity and do bad things with that and try and profit from that. That's one. We also, like, AI tools are great in terms of software application development. In effect, you can put in requirements and get the code you need to build software pretty quickly. And there are AI tools that are creating malware very quickly and very specifically. So, you know, you got bad actors that are using the tools that are there to create the software, but they're creating the bad software that will go onto your machine and potentially steal your data. And, you know, and again, be used against retailers, be used against business, used against you as a person as well. And then there's image and voice cloning as well, is a third area that we're seeing emerging. And that's interesting because of this stuff I spoke to you about around two-factor authentication, where a lot of our problem is just, again, it's kind of, as a card acquirer, as a payments company, we want to make sure Kieran is Kieran. And that's sort of our problem. Is this Kieran? Kieran's not standing in front of me, and he's not putting his card in front of me. Kieran's somewhere out there accessing my website, my goods through a system. So how do I know Kieran is Kieran? And that's sort of at the heart of what we're trying to do, to try and just validate that Kieran is Kieran, and that image and voice cloning make that even more complicated.
The image and voice cloning, it really is really scary, isn't it? I mean, the idea that someone can take on the essence of who you are. And I was going to say, if you were texting your mum and you wanted to know that it was actually them you were texting, what would you do? You'd FaceTime them, right? And say, is this really you? And the second that you see your mum and she goes, yeah, it's really me, you believe it.
Absolutely.
But, and I was going to say, so how do you kind of combat against that? But I guess the answer is, as you say, the two-factor, so that you're not just relying on, I mean, there is no shred of trust needed in that process.
I mean, at the moment we're two-factor. Who knows? It could be three-factor, four-factor, five-factor ultimately. Yeah. But yeah, you're just trying to put as many checks in place. I mean, the whole idea of two-factor is it's one of three things: who you are, what you know, are what you have, right? Mm. So who you are is kind of like your thumbprint or your face or something else that's kind of innately inherent to you. What you have could be your mobile device, and your mobile device is registered. And then what you know will be a password that, that only you know to put in. So they're the sort of the three forms of, you know, you kind of separate them and make them as tight as possible, but always have a backup check somewhere.
Yeah.
To kind of validate that. That's the straight answer. But then again, AI does help. So in the same way AI enables all of this, it also will help protect us against these threats as well. You know, the speed with which you can develop something means you can develop the counter to it just as quickly. And we'll see software being developed at a high rate as well. And we'll see kind of antivirus software being developed. And then we'll see, you know, tools that can protect against the image and voice cloning. But again, like, because we've locked down the payment, I know I spoke earlier about the payment and the card number being kind of quite well locked down with this two-factor authentication, fraudsters are going towards identity. So they're going towards that area where they want to steal more about you and know more about you because they know that's the way to unlock the money effectively. So that's where they're putting their time. So again, like right now, emerging threat, but we do have ways to protect ourselves and our businesses against that.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me think, though, that it's so complex. You have a million other things to be worrying about when you're a retailer. This is just another stress, and you know, it's one of those things where it doesn't go from 0 to 1,000 in terms of stress until something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
And then it's everything, isn't it? Then it just eclipses everything, because it could be that your bank account is suddenly empty, or it could be that suddenly all of your customers have been hacked and you're the common denominator or something like that. And yeah. I'm gonna ask you, if you possibly can, Eric, to put aside your bias in your position. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm gonna ask you, is it the case that the only way to really be secure against these threats is by working with, you know, a secure partner in this space? Can they mix and match and build things up and try and do things that way? Is that effective, or is it just that you need someone you can trust to be working with you?
Yeah. I don't want to dodge the question, but yes, you kind of need a bit of both, really, right? But you do, right. I'm not here to push Elavon, but here I go, I'll push Elavon as well. Like this is something we're very, very strong on. You positioned it very well there, Kieran. Like we just find small retailer got into business to be a small retailer, to kind of serve their customers. What do they want to know about data security? That's yeah. not their passion. So it's very much become part and parcel of what we build, that we build it securely, and that we build, first of all of those protections in and all of those services into kind of, you know, what we give retailers who want to work with us. And then there is this other side, though, that we kind of have to talk about a bit, which is, as a retailer, you do take on responsibility about the card and card data as well, right? And this is sort of the hard part, and I understand it for retailers to accept that, even though, you know, you'll contract with a bank and you get the terminal and you get the e-com, you do have responsibilities around that card data. And when that card data is stolen, it's you're primarily responsible, I would say.
It's on your head at the end
of the day. It's on your head. Now, the more of these tools and systems you have in place, it reduces your liability and it reduces your exposure. So it does need attention from retailers to know it. But I would suggest attention, let somebody else take care of it, because that's just going to happen anyway. But choose wisely. Choose somebody that does care about this, because again, it's just it's when it happens, it's the issue, you know. So there's a lot more maybe to selecting your payment partner than how much does that terminal cost or how much does whatever, what's your rates. There's a lot more that you're taking on in terms of risk that you should kind of talk in a kind of a deeper way with a provider around, well, what have you got? You know, how can you help support me there? Like, what am I taking on when I'm accepting cards? Now, it's not to scare anybody, but it's kind of like that is part of your responsibility. And that's why it's important to the infrastructure that you're either connecting to or that you're renting or that you're buying is encrypted, all of that stuff. You've got all of the two-factor authentication done. You've got a good retail environment as well in terms of how you track and don't leave card numbers around and all that sort of stuff, which is part of your responsibility as well. And then kind of as needed, as you grow as a retailer then, and your risk will grow because you're processing more volume and there's more data there, and going online increases the risk a little bit as well. At that stage, you've got to invest or at least consider more sophisticated fraud prevention tools that will, you know, help you as well. But at Elavon, we do a lot in the background. We do a lot of sort of fraud monitoring and management on your behalf without you knowing, you know. And then there's the sort of this is kind of when you really, really want to finesse it, that we've got tools that will help there. So really, you want to have one core partner who really, really takes this stuff seriously. But there are other tools that you could add in as well. But I would recommend, even without my Elavon hat on, it's easier to deal with one and then get a kind of a consolidated sort of view and perspective and a coordinated view of kind of where fraud's at, where your protections are at, you know, what's your liability, all of those things that are, like, it's down to liability, really. Like, at the heart of this, the retailer wants to know, I want to protect my reputation, and I want to make sure I don't have some unexpected fine that is coming to me just because some hackers got lucky, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a thing that you said there that I really resonates with me on all levels, really. I mean, in my professional life, my personal life, and that is that if you're working with the right partner, hopefully they probably shouldn't be in contact with you, because that means that everything's going well. They're doing things in the background. It's working. They don't have to talk to you. Like, that's kind of the dream, isn't it? To have something done like that.
It's back to the kind of the payment experience, the customer experience, where kind of as head of product, I'm trying to make it as seamless as possible so that the customer almost doesn't think too much about the actual payment, because that's considered the worst part of a retail experience. Similar to fraud, it's like we want to be standing behind you, protecting you, you know, understanding you need to run your business. You need to run your business. You're busy enough. You don't need all of this stuff. But you do need to spend just a little bit of time when you select a partner, knowing it's there. And then after that, just feel secure. It's worth it.
Yeah, 100%. Well, look, I think that's the perfect place to conclude. But Eric, it has been such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time. I feel like I've learned a lot. I'm sure our audience do too. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon. But thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Kieran. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
I want to say a huge thank you once again to Eric for taking part in our podcast, and a huge, huge thank you to Elavon as well for partnering with us on this podcast. And if you are looking for some more resource on the subject that we're talking about, we just released a fantastic piece with Elavon. You'll find it on the Retail Gazette site. So go and find that. It's 5 ways to combat the rising threat of fraud. But with that, thank you so much to our audience as well. Fantastic to have you along with us for the ride. And we'll see you again very soon.